Hi, my name is Hamasaki, and I belong to bioengineering, just across the next building, UCLA. And I, together with Dr. Zach, Pat Zach, tomorrow, will give you 6 hours of crash course of cell biology and start talking about chemistry. Before I start, how many of you actually are actively doing biological research or biochemical or molecular biological research? You do, okay? And how many of you remember you had biology class? Okay, how many of you don't remember or never ever had a biology, or you don't remember anything anymore? That's good, okay. We try to put the wide perspective of the cell activities, structural activities, and some crash course of protein chemistry. If you have any questions, just raise your voice, please. Sometimes I use jargon, sometimes I use a little too much technical terms. So I try not to use it, but you never know. So. So first session is the cells. And because of my training and our emphasis in the bioengineering, our talk, our sessions are more focused on the animal, especially human cells and tissue cultures, and mammalian tissue cultures, not like bacterial engineering nor plant tissues. And as you know, human body consists of these levels, different levels, you probably remember. You can crash down the three components into all human bodies. One, cells, most of the cells are alive, and some of the cells you still have, we think, is literally dead, like your hair, your nail, are the dead cells. And extracellular matrix, that's the protein and sugar, and as well as other components that which cells are produced and spread it around the cells. And then these tissues and cells and matrix are embedded in the fluid, aqueous environment. So cells are responsible for, of course, not only its own, maintenance, but also they are responsible for making and the maintenance of extracellular matrix, as well as maintenance of these solutions. Of course, you are ultimately responsible for overall intake and outtake of this, everything. That was you eat and you exhaust, so. And here's the unique feature in the biology. You have skeletal muscles, your muscles. And the muscle are actually, one muscle consists of many, many, what we call muscle fiber. Physiologists call muscle fiber, actually the individual long, very long muscle cells. And if you take a look at each muscle fiber, inside this, and you have protein fibers called myofibrils. And these myofibrils consist of mainly two protein fibers, now five fibers, very defined fibers. One is called thin filaments here, and other is called thick filaments, this purplish filaments here. And they are overlap in some regions to each other. And actually, this thick filament, this fiber, it consists of molecular motor assembly called myosins, that you probably heard. And this shows the schematic diagram of this individual myosin molecules, about 250 to 300 kilodaltons, and has two molecular motor heads. What do they do here is, this is not electron microscope or anything, this is just cartoon. Okay, so how myosin head moves with the ATP hydrolysis. And this head with ATP hydrolysis moves 5 to 10 nanometers. Nanometers, 10 to the minus 9 meters, the step, making steps each time. And your muscles in your body is not going to make more than 20 steps per second. So individually, your muscle myosin molecule only travels very small amount. However, you have molecular assembly of this, as I showed you, the structure. And this activity is enormously amplified. And then, I don't know, you can run, I cannot run 10 miles per hour, but suddenly you can do 1 mile per hour, and which is like enormous amount of the amplifications. Yet, of course, you have so many of these heads working individually any given time. But my point is, this is a unique part of the biology to make smallest molecules that I studied as nanomolecular bioscience to all these muscle physiologies. Now, coming to a little more of culture way of seeing the cells. All right, the cell is the smallest living unit of the body. That's how we define. And I'm gonna give you a definition of at least my version of definition of life or death of the cell through these tutorials. But first, this idea is a minimal common components found in human cells. And some of the human cells, like these red blood cells, for instance, even does not have nucleus, does not have mitochondria, but it's all surrounded by this lipid bilayer called plasma membrane or cell membrane. And on this cell membrane, there are many, many proteins embedded or attached inward, outward, or going through this membrane. And inside there are enzymes and the cytoskeletal component or try to organize inside architectures. But in any given tissues, this is blood, this is more endoprate, the muscle, bone, this is salivary gland, I guess, and here's the epithelium. As you see, you started, or any human being started with a single cell, but appearance as well as activity or function of the cells varies. Even life of the cells varies. Lifespan of each individual cells varies. Some cells you use for life form, almost. Other cells literally die in a few hours. You make it, you die, like some of the immune cells. Literally, half-life, once it's deployed, it's only a few hours. This kind of this functional aspect, tomorrow morning, in 2 hours, Pazza's gonna give you more details of the lectures, dynamics of the cells and life. So, having said that, here is very simple version of schematic diagram of the plasma membrane without any proteins drawn here. This, it works as a barrier separating interior and exterior. And the interior actually is the cell, what we call cytoplasm or cytosol. And the exterior is usually extracellular fluid, or in the case of some other cells, just directly interfacing to environment. And as you see, a lipid bilayer consists of, I have a little more details here. Okay. Here. They consist of two halves of this phosphorylation.
Not that kind of cell.
And in life, any given cells have so many different kinds of these membranes, like an alarm clock. Any other phones? membrane structures and functions in second ones later today. But as you see, it's not simple membrane. It's, yeah, they consist of many molecules. And here, small molecules, you can see spike here and there. You can see yellow version here, are infamous crystals. Some of you may have problem with. Here is the point of the life of, or life or death of the cell. And every, almost given any single activities of the cell, from protein productions to maintenance of the cell activity, you required ATP or analogous nucleotides. And in ATP is required to synthesize, actually GTPs, a lot of proteins, of course, to make DNAs, RNAs, or duplicate, or any kind of metabolisms, many metabolic pathways requires ATP. And not only that, even to some extent, many molecule intake, even glucose intake in some cells, requires ATP. And you take ATP into the cells and then digest through these metabolic pathways to make ATP. So having ATP and establishing it, what a cell established here is this membrane potentials, which is established actually by ionic imbalance or electrochemical gradient of mm-hmm. sodium versus potassium inside outside. I'm going to give you that one later, but having this membrane potential drives many of these intakes of the amino acids or any other molecules to maintain cell activity. Many of the actual experimental dye under microscope, you can stain and check the cell viability, actually. Some of them at least checking these membrane potentials. So ATP is, in a way, central molecules for your life. And having ATP here inside is the key and establishing this gradient. Now, before we go into human cells, just quick peek of the bacteria. This is a schematic diagram of the E. coli, I guess it's E. coli, look like it. And it's about micron long and does not have any organelle or membrane-bound structures. Has called nucleoid. It's condensed, sort of condensed DNA molecule. And what we call cytoplasm, packed with the proteins and solutions. And outside is membrane as well as sugar coat. And even bacteria, in comparison to this cell, establish all these that electrochemical gradient and have establishing membrane potentials. That principle, this principle is the same all through this. No matter what, human cells to yeast to plant cells to E. coli. However, we evolved into these eukaryotes, and now inside the, our cells are quite complicated, as you see in comparison to bacteria. And what we call these structures or organelles. Various organelles exist. Of course, the biggest one, most likely, you see, is nucleus. And then there are many what we call membrane-bound organelles, here showing various shapes and colors. And there are some other organelles which are not membrane-bound, for instance, a centrosome and such. And we're going to take a look at this quick, a little quick thing in this hour. And this is actually, I took this slide from medical school textbook on chapter one. And this is, I took the picture from cell biology textbook chapter one. or two. And what I call is prototypical mammalian cells or eukaryotic cells. And you can hardly see this kind of cells with the exception of somebody found one here or drawn this from here. In life, almost any given cells that you have, our cells have unique shapes, size, shapes, and functions. And many cells are quote-unquote polarized. On one surface of the cell has a different function from the other cell. And I took these three cells here, showing here, all belong to intestinal epithelial cell groups. And here is the small intestine, and you have microvilli, and here's absorption surface, a nucleus is here. It goes into the pancreas cell, which secretes a lot of digestive enzymes, and these are this digestive enzyme packages. And so it looks very different. And these membrane organelles drawn here are for protein synthesis for these digestive enzymes. Here, going to the hepatocyte, it's the liver. Liver still belongs to intestinal epithelial cell groups. And now it's very different. First of all, most of the surface are facing with the blood. And here is a counterpart. This small space actually is counterpart of this surface. And of course, liver does everything from detoxifications to sugar storage to you name it. So here's a comparison of eukaryotic and also prokaryotic cells. Because of these the simpler structure and memory prokaryotic cells or bacteria only rely on diffusion to distribute materials from inside or to the outside or inside through this bacteria, bacterial size or prokaryotic cell size is limited. It says up to 10 micrometers, very rare. Most likely bacteria size is 1 or 2 microns. Whereas all with the additional structures and cytoskeletal components, eukaryotic cells can be as big as 100 microns. 100 microns is not a limit. Your motor end neurons spans from your spine to your toe is few feet length, I don't know how long, but they're depending on you, but they can be as big as that. And everything is more organized or having more organelles. And energy metabolism and everything in bacteria is all done in that simple bud. Whereas in eukaryotic cells, most of the ATPs, economically speaking, ATP is made in mitochondria. And everything, energy metabolism is through cytoskeletons. Now we have found some cytoskeletal component in bacteria in some circumstances, but it's more complex. And the molecular motors here, we yet found molecular motor here, or we haven't identified that is nailed yet. And intracellular movement I was talking about in bacteria is not. That's what we officially said. No active transport of molecules or organelles left to right inside the cell. Really just rely on all the diffusion, start limit the size. Whereas all these neurons and every cell has cytoplasmic streaming and the molecular motor and activities to mitosis are relying on this cytoskeletal component. Here, in case you speak to some classical biologists or basic medicine people, we classify all the tissues, human tissues, only into the four types What is epithelial tissue? Epithelium does not, just in the, to tell you, the epithelium does not limit your exterior epithelium, your skin, but also your gut lining of this intestine, stomach, and everything, urinary tract, and everything lining of the cells are belonging to this epithelial tissues. And second one is rest of this. One is nervous tissue, obviously it's a brain and peripheral nervous system, your nerves, and the muscle tissue, as I showed you at the beginning. And the rest of them belong to this connective tissue variety. Of course, the main connective tissue is connective tissues, dense or loose connective tissue, your dermis inside, and your adipocytes here also may be found in here. But also, your structural component, this is cartilage, and this is bone, also belong to connective tissue. Because of the origin and locations, even blood cells, these are white blood cells, red blood cells, these cells also belong to the connective tissue. So what's the tissues? Tissue is defined as cell organizations together with extracellular matrix. Tissue doesn't have to be consist of one type of the cell. Could be more than one cell, but I showed that only one kind of cells in each case here. Epithelial tissue, for instance, cells align each other and are connecting by a protein complex. We call cell junction or adhesion materials. Some other tissues, namely connective tissues and such, has this extracellular matrix all surrounding each cell. Muscle tissues through, nerve tissues through. Nerves and the muscle cells have very thin connective tissues surrounded, whereas loose connective tissues such collagen or bone, cartilages, have this matrix and cells are scattered in these connective tissues. That this, you know, part is probably the part many of you use for matrix binding. And giving these different kind of tissues to put things into the one functional unit is organ. For instance, in the spleen, spleen is covered by connective tissue capsules, receptors, and matrix. And also you have blood cells and the other type of cells inside. Organs, some organs are not this enclosed organ, like a digestive system organ is what we call hollow organ. But any given organ is defined as one functional unit, consists of several tissues. For instance, this is a tissue I used to study. This is epithelial tissues from your airways, trachea. And now going, focusing more towards cell appearance of these individual tissues. And you can see clearly from here to here on your tracheal epithelium, your airway, ear tube epithelium. And you can see many different kinds of cells here. Part of the reasons we cannot make thin sections, thin enough, just one cell layers. You see the overlapping of the few layers of the cell here. But this is a diagram I drew from here. And as you can see, ciliated cells and goblet cells, which secrete mucus, basal cells here, and the other few different cells scatter around on these tissues. And some of them works for sensory purpose, the other works for immune purpose. And this is an example of the same origin of stem cells here. This basal cell is reserved cell, not really stem cells. It's half differentiated, so I cannot say this is stem cells anymore. But of this cell could become these ciliated cells or mucus secretory cells. And these two cells have totally different functions. Came from this one same ancestor cells. And you have keep these cells. And depending on even your body condition change or infection or something, they make different kinds of cells. Here is another example of the tissues. This is skin. Skin starts from here to here, the surface, or this is probably the palm, your palm. So our skin layers are a lot thicker. And even these layers are skin layers, actually it's a dead cell, or you can say dendrite, or just the skin, dried skin out on the exterior. And you can see many different appearance of the cells. But also, this is a one cell going through from this area to this area and give rise to this area. You can see the timeline of the one cell line going from here where cells are continuously dividing and making new ones. And then next minute or next hour, these cells are pushed towards this because the cell division continuously takes place here. And then they undergo maturation. And here, cells make a lot of lipoproteins. And then finally, cell die. Cell dies, but inside these skin cells, you have a lot of keratins. So the keratins left here. And still, we consider as a dead cell. That is why you can pick up, for instance, your fingerprint nowadays and get the DNA analysis for fingerprint because this area still contains DNA. So you see this kind of timeline of the same cells. Whereas there are some cells, for instance here, lonely cells here, lonely cells not associated with other cells here. These are probably different cells. This shows a better picture of the one type of the cell, this melanocyte. It produces melanin granules. And no matter who you are, I don't see any albino person here, so all of us making this melanin gives the skin color. Whiter people, less color skin color, breaks down this melanin as soon as it makes by these epithelial cells. You continuously making the melanin by this melanocyte and then inject it to these cells, but most of us break these melanin. Whereas dark skin people retain this melanin. That's why you get the dark skin or darker skin, or if you get the suntan, your skin becomes darker because you kill the enzymes here. Also, you increase the production here, but you kill the enzymes with UV, that's why you get darker skin. So cell adapts all these conditions, and this darker skin means that you have a protection. Body try to protect against UV, not going to your body. It's a very dynamic process. That's what we saw here, and this. So, this is a problem in biology. What we can see in naked eye is from pretty much up to like this area, just skin layers. And then up down to tissue levels to here's to just before the nails, we need to use light microscopes. Now, evolution of light microscopes making better and better, and used to be light microscope resolutions limited to 0.3 microns or so. Now, I can detect with all these optical tricks, and I can detect up to 5 nanometer, 10 nanometer size in some circumstances. But we are limited to this. And beyond this, we have to use most likely electron microscopes. And giving these electron microscopes, many of these slides I showed you, like this, are fixed tissue or fixed cell. Fixed means you kill the cell. And you not only you kill the cell, you treat it with alcohols and other dyes. So the problem that we see and we discuss, especially in biology, biopsy sample and such, are not intact. And just keep in your mind, we are looking at something already fixed. And especially these requires a lot of not only fixation but also a lot of interpretations. So again, going back to prototypical mammalian cell, and these are the sort of the stash of the components you have. And mainly, you can see plasma membrane, and then membrane bound organelles started with nucleus, and all various membrane bound organelles. I'm gonna go through it. And cytoplasmic component, cytoskeletal filaments, actin filaments, microtubules, intermediate filaments, keratin filaments, and so on, so on. And there's some external extensions of cells. Namely, there are two kinds, microvilli and cilia or flagella, many cells have. And these are literally extensions of the plasma membrane, especially microvilli, to increase membrane surface. However, this is the diagram, still diagram. You know, as again, I said, any given cell, you don't see this kind of the shape of the cells. More likely this. This is one neuron drawn in this way. And neuron has distinctive regions. Well, first part we call it dendrites, or these spines. And then what we call perikaryon, or a cell body, and nucleus. And then one of these extensions is unique among the others. It's called axon. And this is where information is transmitted towards downstream. And finally, it reaches to this axon terminal or synapse. And not only having this shape, but as you remember that I showed you that there are lipid bilayer pictures. If you have lipid bilayer and put it to the aqueous solutions, it makes just a round glob. To maintain this kind of unique shape, not only from outside, but mainly inside, you have a system to keep these cells in shape. That is the function of cytoskeletons. No, cytoskeleton not only keeps this shape, but also even keeps these organelles in order where to keep it, where not to go. For instance, membrane proteins here, I'm going to talk about it at the end of today's talk, are very different from this region. And this region is again different from this region. And some of these features, we started to understand how this unique feature of the membrane functions or proteins are kept in place, not going another way. But we still have many, many unsolved questions. Why proteins are inserted here, not here, single proteins? If you screw up, your all this information processing will be screwed up. So inside, cell makes a lot of efforts to keep in order. Here, I said, it's a trigger zone here. All right, this is just a unique not a diagram, dendrite cell body, and then trigger zone. And action potential starts from here on the axon down to the axon terminal, or a synapse. Given almost any cells, cell has unique shape. Even egg, oocyte, which looks like a round, perfect round cell, have some polarization on one side over the other. Red blood cells, you know, it's like a disc shape or cone shape. And so, and shape reflects functions many times. So, if you remember all this prototypical image of the cells and your education before, please disregard it. Cells are very complicated. Here's another reason here, enough to emphasize for you. Here's secretory cells here showing, like pancreatic juice to your saliva, to your hormones and such. And for instance, you make pancreatic juice in the pancreas cells. The other side of pancreatic cells, literally facing the blood or tissue media, tissue switch of interstitial fluid. You don't want pancreatic juice which breaks down the proteins left and right into your bloodstream. You want to release in the right place, in the right time. That's the point of these secretions, polarized cell and such. So you really have to do this, you have to organize everything inside the cell, where to make the protein, or where to ship this protein, when not to ship this to other proteins. Some virus, I think flu virus, that's true, hitched on these unique tracks and coming to here, and some go out to here again using these tracks. Some virus come in and then making their proteins and hitch onto the system to go into the bloodstream. So this unique way of organizing cells is very important. And any given, you know, you do, most of you probably do simulations or tissue engineering and such. Please just be careful of these functionalized surface of the cells. Yes?
What is the rough ER referred to?
Oh, rough ER refers to rough endoplasmic reticulum. It's about part of the protein synthesis machinery. I'm going to go, we're going to see it in coming minute. And again, polarizations. This is epithelial cells. Now, I'm going to give you one important terminology here. It's apical surface versus basal surface, or we call basal lateral surface. Here. And most of the cells have distinctive function in apical versus basal lateral surfaces. And to separate these two halves, cells put a barrier called tight junction or occluding junctions in the cell membranes. And we're going to take a look at the next cell anyways. But here, almost any cells, and you can find basal surface or basal lateral surface, which most likely facing to the blood or tissue fluid, versus apical surface, which facing exterior or inside the gut or airspace. This is the bright functions here. Not only these are the functions of exporting its important, but also this is now what we see is the intestine, called intestine villus. You have a lot of these finger projections in your small intestine for absorption. And here, this one cell layer of the epithelial cells of this villus the small intestine, makes this apical versus basal lactose difference. So you digest the sugar into glucose. And the first, you import glucose through the cell into this way. And then this is easier GLUT2 proteins to export the glucose into your bloodstream. This is one way. It makes it so sometimes even the gradient is higher here of the sugar over here than this side, but you use this energy dependent, as I told you, ATP dependent, this process to make sodium potassium gradient that drives this glucose import from the outside to your cell into your body. That's why I told you that energy is important, and then this polarization is important. In order to do this, you need the unique proteins here and here. You don't want this protein this side or this protein this side. So, cell even makes the protein with the same one, this protein synthesis machine, I'm gonna take a look at it, right? And exporting these different proteins, this glucose transporter here, into apical surface versus, for instance, GLUT2 or this ATPase into basal lateral surface. Our cells are not perfect, and we know sometimes screw up takes place. And there are some people found that there are collection mechanisms to take out the protein on the wrong side and bring it to the right side.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
Is this right, there's a tight junction?
Yes.
Sort of a barrier in the membrane that prevents the mixing from the apical and the bilateral protein?
Right, right. Next hour, we're going to take a look at tight junctions a little more carefully, yes. And now, we're going to take a look quick on the O&Ls in order here. And most of the O&Ls are membrane bound, which means these are individual, this layer, yellow layer, the lipid bilayer. And this is a pretty nice diagram of 3D appearance of the O&Ls. Here you see nucleus, and nucleus actually is not bound by single membrane. It's actually these individual sacs, small flattened bands, surround the nucleus of your DNA materials. And this membrane is continuous to the other one. Here is a raphial. And from raphial, membrane continues to smooth the ER. ER stands for endoplasmic reticulum. And these two distinctive appearance of the endoplasmic reticulum has two distinctive functions. Here, you start the protein synthesis for secretory protein and membrane protein. Whereas here, smoothly, you more work for lipid metabolisms. But these membranes are continuous to each other. You can see, you can trace from here to here. And this is what the RAS endoplasmic reticulum does. Today's Thursday morning. We're gonna take a look at how proteins are synthesized and then secreted out. But just quick, take of this is protein is made, started making inside this sac of the endoplasmic reticulum, and then they transport it towards the another membrane system called Golgi apparatus. And this membrane is interestingly discontinuous from here. So there must be a system to take membrane now together with content and then bring it to here. And even you see the layers of these Golgis. And many layers are discontinuous to each other. And while it goes through proteins making more maturations, you modify a lot of proteins to process to make digestive enzymes or membrane proteins. And then after this, again, this membrane is budding out with a very specific system and make the secretory vesicles or membrane vesicles. And depending on the protein tag inside, many of which we now understood, some proteins are released outside of the cell. Some proteins go into the phagosome or lysosome, which is a breakdown machinery. And the other protein stays in the membrane, and this membrane vesicles is fused into this plasma membrane to add your membrane proteins, membrane channels, transporters. So a little bit difference in protein sequence or tags, what we call tags, makes all this difference from where to go. These days, of course, with the molecular genetics, we can screw up all of this. So we can ship any proteins to inside, outside, or stay inside. Here is the dynamic nature of these membrane trafficking in association with that protein synthesis. Now, this is called endocytosis. Pat may talk about it a little bit, but nonetheless, this is sort of the way cell can drink or eat small materials. For instance, your lipid or cholesterol intake takes place in this way. You have specific receptors on the membrane and receptors towards, let's say, cholesterol binding proteins or lipid binding proteins or iron binding proteins. And once these proteins coming into the bloodstream or tissue fluid stream and coming into the cell surface, they adhere first all these molecules into here and then start to make these membrane vesicles and internalize with specific mechanisms. You really pinch off the membrane out of this plasma membrane from the inside. And interesting is happening. You still have this receptor, which is your own, and foreign materials, which are maybe could be any proteins, and they are start to get segregated in this endosome somehow. And you are not wasting these receptors. You take out the receptors of away from these contents, what we call ligand, and you shift the receptors going right up to back to your surface. So you can recycle these receptors again, 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 without making it. Whereas these contents that are going into the specific vesicle called lysosome, which I showed you here from here, and proteins are made in this Golgi, and these are most likely digestive enzymes, and keeping this particular lysosome or phagosome, and they are fusing now each other, and then you break down this material, and then maybe amino acids and other components are now released into the cytoplasm, so you can use. Or if it's too bad, finally they fuse, they again budging out from here, and then fuse to outside, and you release to outside. These very intricate membrane trafficking systems is all equipped in the cell and active all the times. What is not written here is all the rails and trains. And rails are our cytoskeletal components, namely actin filaments in the surface and the microtubules inside cytosol. And on these rails are the train systems called molecular motors, which I studied. Biomolecular motors, that I showed you the myosin in the beginning, similar systems carry all these vesicles to the right directions. Yes?
Is it typical of receptors that are involved in endocytosis that, they are recycled?
Yes. Many are, yes.
Are there captured by the cell?
Depending on receptors, some cells don't recycle the receptors. These are pretty much evident in, for instance, in the hepatocyte.
Mm-hmm.
Even given the hepatocyte, transferrin, which it carries iron from your bloodstream into the cell, receptors are recycled. We know that some other receptors are not recycled and destroyed, just one time use. This is another system equipped with particular cells, for instance, macrophage. And here are two sort of damaged red blood cells, almost getting to engulfed into this macrophage. And indeed, this happens all the time in the spring. Damaged red blood cells are broken down and recycled in spring by macrophages. And what they do, instead of receptor, they extend this membranes, what we call pseudopods, and then surrounding like this into the materials, and then internalize these materials. It could be red blood cells, but for instance, your macrophage takes care of your infected bacteria inside the tissue, and then bring it to the cell, and then fuse with this lysosome, and this enzyme destroys. And sometimes they still stay here as a residual body, and sometimes they're released the outside the cell. That's how your in one of the immune defense system takes place like this. So these are pretty much continuous system of this Raphael to Golgi apparatus to protein synthesis machinery. And I will probably repeat it on the Thursday lecture. When there's other important system organelle, it's called mitochondria. You probably heard what mitochondria is and what that. It makes ATP. All right. Mitochondria has two distinct functions. One is, of course, making ATP. Other mitochondria is involved in amino acid metabolisms, either making it some amino acids or breaking down amino acids, take care of the nitrogen. So it's a very important. And this is sort of picture perfect, textbook perfect mitochondrial image, like a sausage with the double membranes inside. And inside you see that the membrane is quite complicated and invaginated here and there. And inside this inner membrane is called matrix, and that's where ATP is synthesized. I'm going to show you a little bit of the picture. And interestingly, mitochondria contain some DNA. And this DNA depends on the species to species different, what kind of DNA species have. But in given humans, we have some DNA. And these DNAs are pretty much conserved, whether coding regions or uncoding regions. And uniquely coming from your mother, because mitochondria, you inherited your mother, not from your father. So for the lineage of this whatever tracing, people use mitochondrial DNA. And uniqueness of mitochondria is, this is not, you probably, most of you have never heard. Actually, many cells, mitochondria has this 3D shapes, like a very complicated 3D system. And any given moment, mitochondria can fuse to each other to make bigger or divide it with the fissions to make a smaller pieces. They're very dynamic in the cells. Why we don't see like this? Because in a microscope tissue preparations, we cut it in thin sections, number one, and we only show what you expect to see the mitochondrial picture. If I have this kind of mitochondrial pictures, I'm sure I cannot convince you this is mitochondria. So I rather show this picture. That's how all the textbooks do it. And here's the, you know, evidence of dividing or fusing mitochondria here. And what they do is they really literally divide or fuse and then divide the DNA again and again. And this is one of the reasons why evolutionary biologists think that the mitochondria is embedded into your cell. Here, this prototypical eukaryotic cells in the ancient time didn't have mitochondria. Just ATP was made just like bacteria inside here. But one day, mitochondria comes in, bacteria comes in, and stayed inside the cell. And then they becoming specialized in making ATP. So one of the reasons why they have double membrane systems. So they are encased in this membrane from this cell and the mitochondrial membrane, in a way, number one. And number two, that's why they divide whenever they want. These divisions or fissions or these fusions are totally, what we believe, totally independent of cell cycles. Totally independent of when cell divides or not. They divide when they want it.
Excuse me, is there any pressure from the environment? Like if you need more mitochondria, do they feel feedback?
Probably. Mitochondria is a very, very dynamic organelle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about it, but since you asked, we have evidence that the mitochondria can be damaged or getting tired, wear and tear of the use. And then the cell fixes mitochondria. Mm-hmm. Most extreme case, one of my friends, now he is in Indiana, studied worse. You have even the mitochondria in the synapse on your toe, and you need a lot of ATP over there for synaptic functions. But they're wear and tear, and they tire. Then cells bring this mitochondria, shipping back to your cell back here, and they're fixing it. And when it's fixed, you ship it back. It's wow, it's really wow kind of features. Many of them, you know, I'm just half bragging it. Okay, you can take that as half or half as bragging it. we really don't understand this dynamics of mitochondria.
Yeah, actually, I remember I have seen a Japanese sci-fi movie about the mitochondria trying to conquer the Earth by inventing human organisms.
Well, we better watch out. 21st century, so. So here's the point of making ATP in mitochondria. I have only a few slides, so don't worry about it. And here's the schematic mitochondria. Some of the enzymes are here, and these pyruvate and the fatty acids are from cytoplasm. This pyruvate is created through glycolysis pathway of the sugar from glucose and such, and coming into mitochondria, so it's fatty acid. And then the separate pathways make these to a molecule called acetyl coenzyme A. This is a central molecule many biologists, including my boss, ex-boss, believe that these molecules have the key of the metabolic pathways. And then this acetyl CoA is injected into the citric acid cycle. And while you break down this tricarbon molecule into the CO2, you make molecules called NADH or FADH2. That is an electron donor into this enzyme system called cytochromes. Here, they receive this electron, and while they're passing through this electron, they pumping protons or hydrogen ions from this internally into this, what we call interstitial space, here. So you have a lot of proton or low pH here. And that pH gradient makes this other protein system called ATP synthase or FOF and ATPase to bring this proton back into here because of the gradient of the proton now created. And while you do this, this molecule miraculously making ATP from ADP and phosphate. And here in the cytochrome system, you use oxygen that you inhale to bind this to make H2O here. This oxygen is not used directly here to make this carbon dioxide. You inhale oxygen goes into the water, and this carbon and other molecules go out as CO2.
So yeah, the oxygen is the electron acceptor.
Right,
of the
right,
chain.
Right.
And so that's why you breathe.
Right. So, here's the interesting part of the advertisement of nanomolecular biotechnologies these days. Here you see something spinning, right? This is, you can see spinning. I hope you can see it. Another one. This is the blow up of the cytochrome systems and ATP synthase or FOF and ATPase. About 40 years ago, 50 years ago, F.R. Rucker of the Cornell University found this molecule and found the systems to make ATP, but he predicted this molecule may spin while it transports these hydrogen from intermembrane space into the matrix. And this proton going here, three protons actually going here, makes the spinning of this system here. And this turning, spinning rotor system, somehow with one spin with the three protons can make one ATP from ADP and phosphate.
How fast is that?
Is real time and a few revolution per second most. It's not that fast. Mm-hmm. And this is actually demonstration at the end of the last century, 1997 or so, first Japanese research group took this Rucker's idea and genetically engineered this part of this unit. And instead of having this, they attached the streptamidin together with fluorescent actin filament, which you can see here. And this actin filament is long enough so you can see real time under fluorescent microscopes. And they give the ATP here, and that's what you see spinning with, consequence of this.
And what is it that I see spinning there?
This is actin filament here. This spinning, rotating here.
So how long is that around? I mean, it's optical, so a micron or something?
A few microns, one micron, two.
That I'm very confused, because you said this is real time, so it goes around basically once a second,
right,
and it dissipates an enormous amount of energy doing so.
Right, right, so you give a lot of ATP.
This is done with the energy of one ATP molecule?
No, there are plenty, like millimolar ATPs here.
Well,
so
you said three hydrogen produce one ATP
right,
and revolution.
Right, right, so this process takes, you know, few times probably, few ATPs per second or so. In turn, you can make.
I would just assume that rotating this once a second dissipates the enormous amount more energy than just that.
A lot of energy, yes.
But in this situation, there's no membrane potentials, there's no hydrogen ions, you know, moving.
In this case,
this.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of an artificial way of looking at the rotation.
Right, maybe enormous energies and such are removed. But nonetheless, this is the point that you're right. And in case of the myosin steps or this, row number of the force they generate is enormous. So many of us believe that we can harvest this energy or this talk to utilize something in the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, you know, bio nanoscience dream would be. But given its size, and of course, it's not that easy to put into real life situations back again. So.
And every movement is an actual generated force because there's no momentum here. There's no, it's extremely low ground.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So not that much.
Yeah.
Here. Here you have shear force in between two units here. As that restricted movement. People try to calculate it out, this rotation versus energy consumption and efficiency of my, you know, with FOFI and APPS.
Yeah, and in the system we see there's another micrometers of active filament maintaining on it, and that is what's dissipating the energy.
Right.
Yeah, but it's one side is just attached, and the other side, you usually have this another stator versus roller system. And you just artificially cut here and attach to, you know, active elements. And so probably loss of energy is minimized or much less in comparison to this stuff. But this is yet people having problems figuring out how much of the real energy.
Yeah, I wouldn't get too excited about this particular example, I don't think. There's no membrane, there's no hydrogen gradient. It's just, you know, 10 millimolar ATP, 20
millimolar,
just driving something.
Well, it's just driven by, you just double the fuel on it.
Yeah. I wouldn't worry too much.
And obviously, you know, even giving time here, real life, you have a lot of proteins which makes shearing also. And extremes as such. This is optimized to lower the load. So
it's just a neat demonstration.
Right.
Of the
similar system, not exactly these protein compositions, but actually similar systems are used for many other systems, including bacterial flagella. Bacteria spin the flagella and swims using this proton gradient with similar kind of systems. Protein compositions and mechanisms are a little different, but so this can be used, people think, in future, or this way or that way. So that's a mitochondria. And as you see something around here, a little small dots on that. You can see this. You can see filaments here. As I said, these ONLs are older and keeping shape with cytoskeletal components. Just a few more minutes. And the three cytoskeletal components, actins, microfilament, microtubules, and intermediate filament. Why intermediate? Because diameter is about 10 nanometer, and in between actin filament and microtubules. That's why it's intermediate. And they do different things. Actin and intermediate filament help the cell on inside, and also going into these junctional complex, especially desmosomes and such, to help next cell to each other. So use that the cell-cell physical communications and such. And also keeps the surface of the cell shape in case of actins. Of course, actin is used as thin filament at the beginning I showed you, with actin myosin systems for the muscle contraction. And intermediate filament are, for instance, keratin filaments are really contribute to tensile strength of the epithelial cells. Important idea of this is self-assembly here. You can see small beads here, or lining, or bigger beads here. They are made as small components, as a protein, individual protein. And they assemble as, you know, as you design by itself. That's the key, keyword these days. People use self-assembly. for bioengineering. This came from originally from this idea of the self-assembly of microtubules or microfilaments. And not only that, microtubule, especially in case of microtubule, which consists from alpha, beta, tube, and dimer, they're very dynamic. In given cells, in given moment, you shorten the microtubules or elongate it based on your needs. Especially when you go into the to this from like this quiescent type of the interstate of the cell into mitosis, you use same tubulins to make totally different array of microtubules for totally different functions. So it's very dynamic. These tubulins or microtubules are also used inside this for backbone of cilium and flagellum for beating. So these proteins are, functions are very dynamic, nature is very dynamic, and I believe that the Pat Zaps will give you a little bit of explanation. The finally, the biggest one is nucleus. And nucleus, as I told you, is a double membrane sac like this. So, to get into the nucleus, you have to go through this pore in between this sac or envelope. You have specific pore. And this pore limits what to go in or what to go out. So you need a specific signal or tab to go in or out. And another thing, important thing, of course, is the chromosomes inside here. And you see this dark materials here. And these are the condensed chromatin or chromosomes. What we call in condensed chromatids. And then here inside, you see a little paler picture, appearance here. These are probably extended chromatin or chromosomes, which are under transcription to make RNAs, to make proteins or other functions. So active one is less condensed and sit probably middle side of it. Quiescent one, you keep just right on this membrane wall. So you have organization freedom at this level. And not only they have this genetic information, but specialized areas and the nucleus called nucleus have distinctive functions. Nucleus is where you make ribosomes. Ribosomes is, as we're going to take a look at it Tuesday, is protein synthesis machinery. And this ribosome consists of a lot of proteins and the ribosome RNAs. And you make this RNA, ribonucleic acid strands from DNA, and also another messenger RNAs for protein templates. And these messenger RNAs are sent to out to this cytoplasm. With these ribosomes already made, you make a lot of these proteins. And these proteins are transported into nucleus and into nucleus, and you assemble everything into the inside nucleus. And ribosome actually consists of two subunits here inside this nucleus. And it's maybe because today, I don't know why, but they take this apart and then they ship back to this cytoplasm through this nuclear pore. I showed you the last slide before. All these pores are same, believed to be the same pore, makes these transport big units to small ones. And then you assemble again, and then you assemble with the messenger RNA, and then make proteins. This is very dynamic feature here. Obviously, this is a big size, so a pore has to be expanded physically, or some other mechanism to let this guy go out. So this is pretty much what you have in your cell And next lecture, we're going to take a look at this plasma membrane. So mainly, you have protein synthesis machinery and the protein degradation, endocytosis, namely, and also mitochondrial system, and nucleus. And in between these are cytoskeletal components. That functional aspect of the cytoskeletons and adhesion and such will be lectured by Pat tomorrow. Next hour, we're going to take a look at these membranes, plasma membranes that make